Okay, good morning, everyone. Hopefully, we'll have a little bit more success getting through our Ma'ar Makomos this morning. All right, so remember, just a little bit of a quick review, as our last shiur was, last class was a little bit labadig. So remember, again, we're now focusing on the Eretz, focusing on the earth. So the Eretz says, the Pasuk from Sefer, Tehillim Chav Dalet Aleph, L'Hashem Ha'aretz Umlo'o, Teva V'yoshveva. Literally, again, the earth and everything in it belongs to Hashem, the inhabited area and all that dwell within it. So remember, again, we quoted the Gemara, just do a quick review of the couple of sources we did do. We spoke about the Gemara Maseches Brachos that seems to connote a contradiction. On one hand, the Pasuk says, Hashamayim Shamayim La Hashem Va'aretz Nasan Livnei Adam, which seems to indicate that the earth belongs to who?
Adam.
The earth belongs to who?
Adam.
Us. Good. Va'aretz Nasan Livnei Adam. Good. Earth belongs to us. Versus our Pasuk, which indicates that again, La'ashem ha'aretz umlo'o, that everything belongs to the Ribono Shel Olam. So which one is it? How did the Gemara resolve that seeming contradiction? Anyone remember?
Before.
Excellent. Before a bracha, after a bracha. So before a bracha, ultimately everything belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. After the bracha is when man redeems it from the Ribono Shel Olam. So remember again the example we gave, what do we compare this to? Mi'ila, excellent. Right, this was the Gur Aryeh in number 3. So the Gur Aryeh Kedimara quotes the Gemara Kalanena mina olam belo bracha ma'al. Whoever goes ahead and enjoys the world without making a bracha is committed mi'ila. So remember again, same way mi'ila, if something belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, I cannot go ahead and utilize it without what? Redeeming it. How does the process of redemption work? What occurs? One word. Transfer, excellent. Transfer the sanctity of the item, usually in the case of redemption. What am I transferring it onto? Money. Was that what that was? Good, thank you, good. Right, money. Good, so I transferred it onto money. Of course, the question that was raised, I don't remember who raised it, I think a couple of you brought it up, is what's the problem with the comparison? Right, we're comparing bracha. Good. We're comparing bracha, ultimately, again, to mi'ilah. So essentially, the world pre-bracha belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu just as the wood belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. And just like I can't use the wood, unless, of course, I redeem it, transferring the sanctity of the wood onto money, so too I can't use the world without a bracha. The problem, of course, we ran into is, okay, so what happens with the sanctity of the item? So again, simple example, I have the apple. I understand the apple belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. La Shema Aretz Umlo'o. Yet it says, Va'aretz Nasan Livnei Adam. So which one is it? Can I eat the apple? I can't eat the apple? The answer is, you can. You just first have to redeem it from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the assumption of the mechanics over here is that what does redemption mean? Somehow I remove the kedusha from the apple, and therefore that allows me to utilize it in a quote-unquote mundane way. It allows me to utilize it just for my own benefit. Of course, the problem is, where does the kedusha go? Any suggestions, by the way? Where does the kedusha go? Also, very beautiful. It could be that the words of the bracha to the apple is like the money to the wood. That the kiddusha itself devolves upon the actual words. Good, beautiful. What else? Any other suggestions?
For the person.
What do you mean?
Because when you make a bracha, you do that.
Beautiful. That maybe the kiddusha of the actual item devolves upon the individual, which is incredible. Yes. Beautiful. Maybe it just is in the world, devolves upon the world. So either, again, devolve upon the word of the bracha, devolve upon the person, devolve upon the world. Good. Any other suggestions? So this is important. This is not our topic for today, but I just want to put it out there for you, something to think about a little bit, which is that, in general, the comparison of the Maharal is a little bit, not flawed, but challenging on a different level. You see, what does redemption from the Beis HaMikdash? Let's play this out. The Beis HaMikdash owns wood. Beis HaMikdash doesn't need the wood, but I happen to be building a deck. So I would like to purchase the wood from the Beis HaMikdash. I'm going to purchase the wood. What's the status of the wood when I purchase it from the Beis HaMikdash? What's its status? I'm sorry? Oh, good. Before I put, after I purchase it. After I purchase it from the Beis HaMikdash, what's its status? So before I purchase it, it's Kaddish, because it belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. After I purchase it, Chulin. What does Chulin mean? What's the definition of Chulin?
Mundane.
I know that. I'm saying, give me, what does the name represent? Absent Kedusha, excellent. Absent Kedusha, something that is chulin means, see, there are certain words in Lashon HaKodesh. For example, what does Tumah mean? Translate the word Tumah. Impurity. Does Tumah really mean impurity? I'm sorry? Good. So the Maral Gurari discusses exactly. He says, really, the word Tumah means absence of purity. This is incredibly important. I'll tell you why. Because many times, in the context in which Tumah is used, Tumah often, what's the connotation of Tumah?
Dirty.
Dirty. Right? Something unclean. So in certain forms of Tumah, I could understand that. Tumas meis, Tumas sheretz. When you have, let's say, Tumas Nida, which is so what does that mean? Someone's impure? So that's why if you understand that ultimately, again, Tumah really means the absence of purity. So again, on a Taras HaMishpacha level, if a woman has the ability to conceive life and then loses that ability for that month, it's not dirty, it's not unclean, it's not... There is an absence of Kedusha. The ability to create life represents an incredible elevated stage of holiness. When that ability is gone for now, then ultimately there's a void. So it's very important because in Lashon HaKodesh, certain words are defined by what they're not. I don't know if that made sense in English, but like the real definition of Tumah is something that is what?
Not Tahar.
Which, you know, is not usually a good precise definition. So the definition of something that is chulin is something that is not kadosh. Why is this important? Because when a person redeems, I go ahead and I redeem that piece of wood to build my deck. Is there anything that a Jew does that is chulin?
No.
In fact, if you think about it, chulin is a word that applies to what? Where do you see the word chulin used? Right, stuff, objects. Objects are chulin. Food, right? For example, again, times of the Beis HaMikdash, where people ate, they had to maintain ritual purity in terms of consumption, shumas, maisus, all different things. There was a concept of chulin. So chulin was a food that was not treated, that did not have any sanctity, and was not treated in a special way. Food could become chulin. Interestingly enough, stuff, objects can become chulin. The one thing that's never chulin is man. Because what's the job of man? What is the core avoda of a Jew in this world? You ever think about this? I'm sure this keeps you up at night. Right? Thinking, what is my core avoda in this world? Right? Ma chovasi ba'olami, as Ramchal says. What is the core avoda of the Jew in this world? What is it? I'm sorry? To serve Hashem. B'mekadeshim shemayim. Good. What else? All correct. By the way, there's no real wrong answer to this. To elevate. See, if you think about what is the one thing we can do that nothing else in this world could do, it's to elevate the Gashmi. Well, what the Ramban calls Kiddush HaChomer. We have the ability to sanctify things that at first glance just look ordinary and mundane. Isn't this the entire avoda of a Jew? Think about this for just a moment. What's Judaism's view on Gashmius? Judaism's view on Gashmius. Somebody asks you, you're in an elevator with someone, they're making small talk. By the way, what's Judaism's view on Gashmius? What would you say? Two words. It depends. Like most things in Yiddishkeit, it depends. What does it mean it depends? It depends how you use it. It depends how you use it. Person uses their Gashmius in a ruchni fashion, it's incredible. If you notice, by the way, Judaism is not an ascetic religion. In other words, we do not preach that the way to find God is to swear off anything physical, material, or physically enjoyable. That is not our hashkafa. In fact, that's a much easier hashkafa to live by because the world is black and white. Anything physical, material, corporeal is bad. Everything else is good. We have a much more complicated hashkafa. Our hashkafa is that anything gashmi in this world is whatever you make it. Is living in a big house something good or bad? It's important. These are things you have to think about now as Emir Tashem, you enter an adult. Good or bad? It depends. Good, all right? You get the hang of this already, right? Everything depends. In other words, a person who goes ahead and makes the furnishing of their house the be-all and end-all of their lives. That to me, accomplishment means, you know, a big center island with marble and 14 dishwashers and this and that and the dining room. And if that's your goal in life, then besides the fact that it's sad, it's also not the way a Jew lives. But a person says, yes, I'm going to have a beautiful home because this home is going to be a center for Torah, for Chesed, for Achnasas Archim. It's going to be where I'm going to raise my mishpacha and inspire my family. It's going to be where I'm going to learn. Then suddenly again, that which for one person could be mundane and meaningless, for another person suddenly becomes something beautiful and halig. It's the incredible dynamic. We sometimes underestimate the power. You know, we say by Havdalah, the concluding bracha of Havdalah is Baruch Atah Hashem Hamavdil Ben Kodesh L'chol. So the Baal Shem Tov says something amazing. The Baal Shem Tov says that what does it mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Mavdil Ben Kodesh L'chol? What does that mean? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, first of all, is Kulo Kodesh. So it's true, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could determine when we're doing things for Kodesh, when we're doing things for Chol, but the Baal Shem Tov says it's more a tefillah for ourselves. Baruch Atah Hashem, Bono Shalom, I'm asking you, give me the koach in the coming week to be Mavdil Ben Kodesh L'chol. Give me the koach to determine what's Kodesh, what's Chol, because a lot of times it's very confusing, because a lot of times things that look Kodesh aren't really Kodesh, and yet things that sometimes I assume are for sure not Kodesh are Chol have the ability to be Kodesh. So this is incredibly important. The reason I'm sharing this with you is because this is important for this discussion. Because remember, we're asking over here, fine. So the Gemara Maral explained to me the world is Kadosh, it's Hekdish, alongside Kadosh Baruch Hu, the Bracha redeems it. And the question we're asking is, where does the sanctity go? So now if I were to ask you again, where does the sanctity go? It's the sanctity in the Mezon of Baruch Hu doesn't leave. It doesn't leave. See, as much as the Maral is saying, he's comparing the act of making a bracha to the halachas of mi'ilah and redemption of a piece of wood with money, the Maral doesn't mean the comparison to be absolutely literal, because whereas a piece of wood could absolutely become chulin, could become totally mundane, divested of holiness, an act of eating, by definition, is an act of kiddusha, or maybe better stated, an act of eating has the capacity to be an act of Kiddusha. It's not necessarily an act of Kiddusha. A person has a choice to how they want to eat, what they want to eat, when they want to eat, where they want to eat. But lemaisa, the act of eating, the act of consumption, is not an act of chulin. It's in and of itself an act of Kiddusha as well. Now, based on that, take a look at number four. Rabbi Nachman, we started this, I think right around the time that Thank You Hashem began at the Bris on Monday. So let's take a look at Rabbi Nachman. So Rabbi Nachman over here writes in the Kuti Halachas something truly beautiful. And you're going to see this is it's a very inspirational piece, aside from Perek Shira, but it's going to fundamentally change also the way you look at brachos in general. So Rabbi Nachman writes this for us. It's Kikala Brachos Shemavarchin, Akala Dvarim, Kulim Heim Bebechinas Motzi Mikoach Al HaPoel. How do you translate that? I know we read that, but let's just review. How do you translate that phrase? Every bracha does what? Excellent. So transforms potential energy into actual or kinetic energy. What does that mean? Ki kodem shemavarchen al hadavar umodim shehashem yisbarach bara oso. Because before you make a bracha on an item, and through the bracha, you admit that HaKadosh Baruch Hu went ahead and created it. Kodem lazeh. Ein shlemos lahadavar. This is a fascinating statement. Before you make a bracha, the item over which you are lacking a bracha lacks shlemos, lacks completion. How do you understand that phrase? Before you make a bracha on an item, the item lacks completion. What does that mean? What's the purpose in this world? Good. How? To elevate into a ruchni thing. Good. So now I'm using the item of a davar shebek dusha. Excellent. How else does the item over which you are making the bracha, how does it go ahead and reach its shlemus through a bracha?
Well, Hashem created it for us to benefit from it, so we're not benefiting.
So good. Meaning, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu? It's very important yisod in general that the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world for us to enjoy it. You know, there's a famous story. Rav Cook, Rav Aram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, Zeches Adel Kodesh Levracha, was stuck in Switzerland during World War I. He went to Switzerland to fundraise for the Jewish community in Yerushalayim, and he was stuck in Switzerland. So the story is told that one day he asked his host to take him to see the Alps, the Swiss Alps. So the host was a little bit surprised. Says, the Rav is in Yerushalayim, what do you have to see the Alps? So there are different versions of the story, but essentially what Rav Cook said is, what do you think? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, you know, Eretz Yisrael for Am Yisrael, and the rest is for the Goyim, the rest is for everyone else? HaKadosh Baruch Hu created something beautiful, it's for all of us to enjoy. So he wanted to see the Alps, but there's something very profound in that story. Why did Rav Cook want to see the Alps? I don't know, but I'd like to think, why did Rav Cook want to see the Alps? What do you think? Niflo Sabori. Because remember, already the Rambam says in Hilchos Deos that if you want to come, we spoke about this in Perek Shur already, if you want to come to fall in love with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how do you fall in love with the Ribbono Shel Olam? Look at nature. Look at nature. The natural world is the way, on a most basic level, to build a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because think about this in just a moment. The Ribbono Shel Olam, Ribbono Shel Olam, Ein Lo Guf, Ve'in lo masige gof, ve'in lo shum din yom klal, Rambam writes, right? The Ribbono Shel Olam has no physicality to him. There's no physicality. And even when the Torah discusses physical features of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like the Yada Chazaka, that's anthropomorphic, right? That's not literal. That's attributing human qualities to a God-like entity, or to a God, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So how do you relate to Hashem? How do I, a physical being, relate to the Melech Machi Hamlachim, who in reality defies all comprehension? So the Rambam writes, it's relatively simple. Look at the beauty of his creations. Look at the beauty of his creations and you will be drawn to him. Which is true. Anyone who appreciates nature knows that nature is an incredible way to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'd venture to say that for many of us, some of our most beautiful and spiritual experiences often happen when you're alone with the Ribbono Shel Olam in nature. You're somewhere beautiful, you're seeing something magnificent, and somehow there's something in your neshama that awakens. Because you realize that you are seeing the nefla'os habore. So Rabbi Nachman says, it's the same idea by food. By food. What is the purpose of a bracha on food? So, or I should say, says Rabbi Nachman, the purpose when a Jew eats, of course, is to sustain my physicality, but also through the food, to see the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Think about this for just a moment. Person eats an apple. How do you see the neflaos habore in an apple? How do you see it? Never had an apple. Right? So, first of all, the color. Right? Think about this just a moment. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have made food, all food, some gray mush. Right? Just like you put gasoline in your car and nobody cares. Oh, I prefer the, you know, scented gasoline. Or, you know, I like the rose petal gasoline. Or I want pink. Or I want blue. I want this. I mean, it just, you put it in a car and the car runs. Because Baruch could have done the same thing with food. Just make it gray mush, put it in your body, gives you the caloric intake you need, and then move on. But what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? Food is beautiful. Food is absolutely beautiful. And if you look at it, you look at an apple and you see how it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a protective skin. And the skin protects the fruit, allows it to grow. And if you go to the core of the apple are the seeds. So as you eat one apple, what's right there waiting for you? What's right there? The ability to create more. Incredible. Incredible. So it tastes good. It's good for me. I can consume it. It has a protective layer. Some things have an edible protective layer. Some things don't have an edible. You ever wonder about this? Why is it that an apple has an edible protective layer, but an orange does not? Well, what's the pshat? There's a chachma to it. It's not haphazard. The Baruch Hashem created everything. And so says Rabbi Nachman, when you go ahead and you make a bracha, and you see the gadlus in this fruit, I'm using fruit as an example, but it's all food items, you begin to see the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the moment that you see the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the food is the moment, in the words of Rabbi Nachman, that the food has reached its shleimus. Because everything in this world has a shlichus. You know, people think that it was Chabad who came up with the concept of shlichus, right? It's not just Chabad and the Kimugad and shlichus. Every person has a shlichus, and every item has a shlichus. So the fruit itself has a shlichus. What's the fruit? What's the avoda of the fruit? If all the efforts is to bring me closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that I should see the greatness in the world. I should see the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu through it. Which, by the way, this also helps you understand another halacha regarding food, which is? Make a bracha, berachas adam. What else? Halacha is how you treat food. Bal tashchis. Ah. See, you thought Bal Tashchis was just your parents being sticklers about stuff, right? But it turns out that Bal Tashchis is actually part of the entire musar and motif of Jewish consumption. Because what does Bal Tashchis say? Don't waste. What do you mean, don't waste? I have plenty. I have plenty. What does it matter? I'm not giving it away to anyone. No one else is going to use this. What does it matter how I treat it? Because that food has a shlichus. That food has a shlichus. And because the food has a shlichus, I'm not going to say that it's kadosh, meaning, well, it is. It has an element of kedusha to it. Before the food fulfills its shlichus, it hasn't yet reached its shlemus. You have to be careful how you go ahead and you treat food. But the moment you make a bracha, and you recognize, A, that a kadosh baruch who created this, and hopefully, again, you say the bracha with enough time and enough kavana to really look at the item. This is the other halacha. When you're making a bracha, where is the food item supposed to be? Idea, if it's something you could hold, you hold it in your hand, and it certainly has to be in front of you. Has to be in front of you. So at the end of the day, why? Why? Because what's the goal when you make a bracha? And this is a tall order, because most of us kind of make brachos on the fly. How we should all get to this level is like to stop, to pause, to examine, to look at the fruit, and to say, wow, ribono shel olam. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. This apple, this orange, this piece of food is one little chelik of your entire bria, and yet I see such dramatic things through this one little item. The moment that spiritual epiphany occurs is the moment that the fruit has reached its limits. There's a question in the back. Someone had their hand raised. Is there a question? Yes. Such a beautiful observation. Such an incredible observation, right? Everything else in the world requires man for its shlemus. Man requires no one else for his shlemus but himself and, of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's an incredible observation. This is the entire, excellent observation. It's the entirety of the human dynamic. Everything else in the world is totally dependent on something else. Man, we are the one creature who have to learn to be independent. Of course, not independent of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but we spoke about this concept. How many times in life, or maybe we will speak about this concept, how many times in life we want to accomplish things? Do you know what happens so often? Somebody has a dream or an aspiration, and it doesn't come to fruition. So generally, when something doesn't come to fruition for you in life, what's the reflexive reaction? Is what? Give up. But when I give up, nobody just likes to give up. Usually, what do we like to do? Right? Wasn't meant to be. That's great because you can also sound from. Right? Good. Right? What else? What else is our reflexive reaction? Blame. Somebody said blame? Blame. Blame, right? This could have happened, but you know what? This person didn't do this. My mother didn't love me enough. My father didn't spend enough time with me. My teacher wasn't nice to me. It was too cold. It was too hot. It got dark too early, too late. There's a whole variety of things that we love to blame. And at the end of the day, ein hadavar tali ela bi. Right, that the greatest, the most important lesson in life is you hold the reins of your life. It's true. There are circumstances beyond your control sometimes that you simply can't, obviously can't control, but you control how you respond to them, you control what you do with them. Everything else in the world needs something else in order to fulfill its shlemus. Man is the one entity, the one creation that has to be fully independent, fully self-sufficient in order to be able to make his or her dreams a reality. An incredible observation. Let's continue, Rabbi Nachman, number 4. So writes the Rebbe. He goes on, he says, Ki akol, I'm in the left-hand column, third line down. Ki akol nivra lichvodo, kedei sheyodu v'yivarchu osalav. Everything in the world was created, like we just mentioned before, everything in the world was created as a way of appreciating the greatness and the specialness of the Ribono Shel Olam. Kimo shekasov, kapala shemamaneu. Ki, kishemavarchin ala pri, borei pri ha'etz, o borei pri ha'adam ha'kiyotze. But now, by the way, it's interesting. The examples that are always used are fruit. Why is it always the example that's used? Correct, because it occurs naturally in the world. That's all, because remember, I just want to point out, this is not like only related to fruit. Fruit is just the easiest way to demonstrate this concept, because at the end of the day, it's naturally occurring. In other words, every other type of food has some type of human intervention. But fruit, just the way it grows, the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu put it in this world. He goes on, he says, Bazeh mamshichin ikar shlemos priyas osa pri okilu achshav nivres ha-pri al yedei ha-bracha sheberach aleha sha'al yedei zeh nimshach shlemos chiyus ha-dikidush. That's such a beautiful idea. Rabbi Nachman says, when you make a bracha over the fruit, it's as if the fruit has been created in this very moment. What does that mean? Because the point of the creation of the fruit was for a tachlis, to show the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When does the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu come out in the pre? The moment the bracha is made. And therefore, says the Rebbe, it's kiviyachol, as if when you go ahead and you make the bracha, it's almost as if in that very moment the pre itself is being created. Nimtza, sha'al yedei bracha, hu bechinas motzi mikoach el ha-poel, shemotzi mikoach el ha-poel shlemus chiyus. So this is what Rebbe said before. Therefore, again, it turns out that when you make a bracha, you're taking the shlemus of the pre out from the potential to the kinetic. Yes?
So how come we can't make a bracha on food and then not eat food?
How come you can't make a bracha on food? There are brachos that you make, experiential brachos. Like Osama Sebereshis, I guess the simple answer to that is, because that's the way Chazal, remember, brachos are rabbinic, it's the Rabbanon. So the way Chazal defined hana'ah from food is ingestion. You can ask, why can't I just make a bracha on an apple just by seeing it? Yeah, I hear. Why isn't there some type of bracha? Again, the simple answer is because that's not how Chazal set up brachas, but that's not really an answer to the question. I don't know. Yes?
Maybe
I'm going to think about that.
Because
the full pleasure of it. Good. That could be. Meaning, looking at it, I guess maybe looking at it gives you one element of niflaos habore. Tasting it, mamish, gives you enhanced appreciation. Beautiful. Good. Yes? So this is an interesting point, right? So this is wonderful. Of all the fruit in the world, we're to be consumed by Jews. So what happens if a non-Jewish individual who doesn't? So first of all, there's two answers to this. So first of all, understand that I think, let's take a step back for just a moment. First Rashi in Chumash asks which question? First Rashi in Chumash. What's the question of first Rashi in Chumash? Excellent, good. Why Bereishis, right? Why Bereishis? Rashi understands the Torah is not a storybook. It's a book of rules, of laws, of ethics. So remember again, what does Rashi answer? Good. What else does Rashi answer? Right? Rashi gives an Eretz Yisrael answer. Rashi says that at the end of the day, that when Klal Yisrael's claim to Eretz Yisrael is challenged, they could open up Sefer Bereishis. They could say, "Oh, the Torah is Bereishis Barlo. Kim Yisrael Asar. Kadosh Baruch Hu created the world. Kadosh Baruch Hu said we get Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, if Hashem created the world, He's the owner of the world, and therefore He has the right to determine who gets which land." So the Maharal in Gur Ari asks a very simple question. What's his question? Right. Who cares? I mean, really? Like, do you think the nation? So you're going to take a Chumash Bereishis to the UN, and you're going to say, UN, listen, I know you guys have been debating whether or not the existence of Israel is legitimate or not, and if there should be a Jewish homeland, but I just want to point out, it's Bereishis, Perak Aleph, Pasuk Aleph, Rashi, Ayin Sham, have a good day. Right? And that's going to be the end. Yeah? What's the answer? Wasn't there someone who did that? Oh, it could be that someone said it. It for sure didn't work. I'm saying it didn't. Yeah, all right, you'll send. Is this from the same person who told you about the astronauts? That's another one. Okay, good. But I'd be very curious to see. I'd be very curious to see that. I don't know. Now, again, I would not be surprised if that argument, meaning, remember, if you speak to even evangelical Christians, right, there are definitely members of the Christian community that absolutely, but I'm saying the Maharal just says, throughout the ages, no one has ever really supported the idea of Jewish right to Eretz Yisrael because of a Rashi. So the Maharal gives a very simple answer. Very simple answer. Anyone know the Maharal?
It's not for them.
Okay, so it's not for them, it's for us. That is true. Simpler answer. Maybe it's not simpler. Different answer. He says it refers to Himos HaMashiach. It doesn't refer to now. It refers to when Mashiach comes. Remember again, what's going to happen when Mashiach comes? So that is the subject of Incredibles. You know, I once saw Shavuos night. I give a 5-hour shiur, and I usually choose a topic. I choose a topic that is something usually like a little bit controversial to many people. So a few years ago, I did Mashiach. I did Mashiach, and I spoke about whether or not emuna in Mashiach is actually an obligation. Is there an obligation to believe in Mashiach? So the Rambam has it as one of the Ikri Emuna. But to point out, many, many, many other Halach codifiers disagree with the Rambam vehemently and say that belief in Mashiach is not one of the Ikri Emuna. The second part that I spoke about was, what does Messianic era look like? And you understand, I'm sure you've learned this throughout your years of schooling, this is subject to incredible dispute. Everything from supernatural existence of trees which produce golden fruit, right, and fully baked loaves of bread that come out of the ground, to an opinion that says, Olam kimin hago noeg. No, the world is going to continue just as it is, with two fundamental distinctions. Number one, humanity will recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which, by the way, is supernatural in and of itself. Can you imagine a world which believes in God? A world which believes in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not a world that becomes all Jewish, that's never part of the plan, but a world that totally believes, every human being believing in the Ribono Shel Olam. What a different world that would be. B'nei Noach keeping their mitzvos, Klal Yisrael keeping their mitzvos. Belief in Klal Yisrael's right to Eretz Yisrael. So belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, belief in Klal Yisrael's right to Eretz Yisrael. And some bring down a third, which is also that belief in the centrality of Torah as a guiding light for humanity, even if not everyone is obligated to keep its precepts. Why am I sharing this with you? Because remember, again, in the Messianic era, going back to your question about what happens to the fruit consumed by non-Jews, so that fruit never reaches its tachlis. So first of all, I think that there is the capacity of a non-Jew to see the niflaos habori in a fruit as well. And part of our job as being an Or LaGoyim is, I think, to go ahead and spread these ideas, to go ahead and teach the world what it means to see God in the natural world and what it means. And I think a non-Jew could accomplish such things even without the bracha. So the bracha is necessary for the Jew. The non-Jew has the ability to allow the fruit to achieve its shleimus even without a bracha, just through a cognition, just through recognition. So let's finish up Rabbi Nachman. Last paragraph, number 4. Ki kol dem bracha, he just restates what he mentioned before. Ki kol dem bracha, because before the bracha, Kilo akol adain b'koach Hashem. Everything is still in the potential stage. Bebechinas laHashem aretz umlo'o. Shakol adain shal Hashem. Ki nechshav kilo lo yotz adain mikocho alapol. Aval achra bracha. So before the bracha, says Rabbi Nachman, everything in the world is in a state of laHashem aretz umlo'o. Everything belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the fruit is not mine. The fruit belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But once I make the bracha, ki ayideh aval achra bracha, as daika va'aretz nasal libnei adam. Only once I make the bracha, then suddenly again the earth has been given to man. I have license to enjoy, for I have allowed that fruit to achieve its shlichus. Yes.
So, why is it seven brachos?
So this is a very important point. So excellent question. So if that's the case, why do we say seven brachos lahakel? Right. If you're in doubt, I have an apple. I don't know, did I make a bray pre-eats or not? What's the halacha? You don't say another bracha. But bracha is so important. So remember, this is where Hashkafas HaMitzvah and Halachas HaMitzvah intersect. Halachas HaMitzvah is a legal framework. Legal frameworks have to operate on principles. Those principles sometimes are not, you don't necessarily see the Hashkafa in the details. Because remember, Halacha is a legal system. So any legal system has to have its rules. So there has to be a legalistic rule, when do you repeat a bracha, not repeat a bracha. So remember again, Safek Brachos LaHakel is not an independent concept. What is it rooted in? Safek Dirabbanan Lekula, right? That's really what it is. Couple that with the fact that you're using Shem Hashem in a bracha. So when you put all of that together, legally, there's no grounds to justify making another bracha, even though you want to say hashkafically, there would be. So again, this is always a fascinating intersect. Whenever we study Tamei Mitzvah or Tamei Mitzvos, there's always this point where, like, you see the legalese of it, the details of it, and the details sometimes don't feel like they shtim with the hashkafa. But that's okay, because the legal part has to be the legal part, and the hashkafa is true even if it's not necessarily manifest in every single aspect. Although, I would tell you with this, If you wanted to reconcile it, I think the way you can reconcile it is like this, that the whole point of the bracha is to see the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to come to a greater level of respect and reverence and love for Hashem. If you're not sure if you made a bracha, not sure you made a bracha, to take HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name again when you're not sure if you need to or not, by definition reflects a lack of reverence and love and commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So sometimes not making the bracha again is in and of itself most demonstrative of my ongoing love for the Ribbono Shel Olam. So Rabbi Nachman finishes off, he just says, let's finish. Fine. So therefore, this is the position of Rabbi Nachman, and Rabbi Nachman understands again, really building off the Gemara, the Maharal, Rabbi Nachman understanding that the entire essence of the bracha, like the Maharal said, is to take the potential, is to transform it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is into mine. Rabbi Nachman says the fruit has potential energy. The bracha makes it into kinetic energy. The bracha allows the fruit to achieve its shleimus. And how does fruit achieve its shleimus in this world? What Rabbi Nachman says is really by being the ambassador of the Ribbono Shel Olam. The way fruit, and I'm using fruit, but it's food. The way food fulfills its shlichus is if food becomes the ambassador of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Through food, through the fruit, through the apple, I see the greatness of the Ribbono Shel Olam, then that fruit has fulfilled its shlichus. Then that fruit has fulfilled its tachlis. Now, this is incredibly interesting because I want to show you one more thing and then we're going to stop for today. If you take a look at number 5, there's an incredible Gemara. So this idea that the job of fruit is to be, whoever thought that fruit was so chashuv, right? That fruit is the ambassador of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So writes the Gemara Maseches Yuma, and this is such an incredibly beautiful Gemara. Abaye Omar, number 5, Abaye said, Kidisanya, Viahaftas Hashem Elokecha. Now, by the way, what's the problem with the Pasuk of Viahaftas Hashem Elokecha? What's the problem? What's the problem? How can you command emotion? How can you command me to love God? You could command me to keep Shabbos. You could command me to eat kosher. You could command me not to wear shatnez. But how can you command me to love a kosher rabbi? That's why, I remember, how does Rashi interpret this pasuk? Somebody knows this Rashi, you're just being humble. Right? This is perhaps one of the most important Rashis in Kala Tara Kula. I'm going to say it, then you're going to say, oh yeah. Rashi says, "Asse dvarav me'ahava." Right? Still getting a lot of blank expressions. Good. "Asse dvarav me'ahava." Right? So go ahead. And what does "Asse dvarav me'ahava" mean? Serve Hashem what? Like you love Him. What does that mean? What is Rashi teaching us? Fake it. Rashi's saying that "V'yahavtas Hashem Elokecha" means, one of the girls in previous years gave me this, right? She said, fake it till you make it, right? That sometimes I don't feel in love with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what do? I act in a way that looks like I love HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So when I do the mitzvahs, if you look at me, you would say, wow, that guy really loves HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But inside, I'm not feeling it at all. Not feeling it at all. And maybe sometimes it's worse. Maybe sometimes not only am I not feeling love, but maybe sometimes even like, I don't even know why I'm doing this. Or why is this necessary? Rashi says, sometimes you just have to act like you're in love. Act like you love it, and the love will come. This is part of a broader motif of Acharei HaPa'ulos Nimshachas HaLevavos. Right? This idea that we believe in Yiddishkeit, which is incredibly powerful, that feelings are influenced by behavior. People often think that feelings come first and then feelings inform behavior. We know that that is unequivocally false. Because you often can't control how you feel, but you absolutely can control how you behave. And therefore, again, Acharei HaPa'ulos Nimshachas HaLevavos means behave in a certain way and the feeling will come. The feeling will come. So Rashi understands, Kibbeh HaKadosh Baruch Hu is commanding me to love Him. What happens? I don't love God. What happens? I don't. You mean, you don't love everything, right? You're supposed to, you're not supposed to love your parents. There's no obligation to love your parents. You just have to go and honor your parents. But let's say again, I'm not in love. So Rashi says, okay, don't worry. That's not the command. The command is, Asei Dvarav Me'ava. Serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu like you're in a state of love, even if you don't feel it, because if you act a certain way, the love will come. So the Gemara here in number 5 interprets it even differently. Which means what? Allow HaKadosh Baruch Hu to become beloved through you. Through you. What does that mean? Person should learn. Person should serve Talmidei Chachamim. Right? Why is it? What does it mean to serve Talmidei Chachamim? What does that mean? What is that? How do you understand that? Sorry? What does it mean to serve Talmidei Chachamim? What are they trying to accomplish by telling me to serve Talmidei Chachamim? So it could be a respect to Talmidei Chachamim. Good. What else could it mean? Role models. Create a relationship with someone who could be your role models. Right? That's what it means. Misham Shalim Yichlam means you're spending time with people. It doesn't mean that, again, yes, there is an element of actually serving Talmidei Chachamim because that creates a connection, also creates a chashiva sa Torah. But what it's really saying is role models. So find for yourself the right role models in life. You have to learn, and you have to find the right influences. Umasno benachos imabrios. What does that mean? Maso umasno benachos imabrios. Literally, again, the way you talk with, well, it's actually two ways to translate it. Maso umaton often means what?
Business.
Be honest in your business dealings. So, learn Torah. Have proper role models. Be honest in your business dealings. Although, maso umaton could also mean what? How else can you translate that? Conversation. Back and forth. That we're going to see this. We're going to see this later on. Back and forth. Talk nicely. Talk nicely to people. Ma'abrios omer salav. Said, if you learn Torah, you have the right role models, you're honest in business, and you are pleasant when you interact with people, what will people say about you? Ashrei aviv shalom da Torah. Praiseworthy is the father of this person who taught this individual Torah. Ashrei rabo shalom da Torah. Praiseworthy is the Rebbe who taught this student Torah. Oy lahem labrio shalom da Torah. Woe to people who don't have Torah in their lives. Ploni shalom da Torah. Because look at this person who learned Torah. Re'u kama na'an drachav. Look how pleasant his ways are. Kama mitukonim asav. Look how good his behavior is. Alav akasa goes on and quotes the pasuk. So first of all, this Gemara is incredible. Because the Gemara says, by the way, what is the mitzvah of v'ahavtas Hashem Elokecha? What's the mitzvah to love God? The mitzvah is not something about God. The mitzvah is to make God beloved in the eyes of others. To make God beloved in the eyes. But how can I make God? See, understand, is Judaism, do we proselytize? No. We don't proselytize. Not only do we not proselytize, but when someone comes to convert, the first thing we tell them is, you're out of your mind. You're out of your mind. You don't need this. You could have a licht to Gan Eden. You could have a beautiful relationship with Kadosh Baruch Hu, and all you need are seven mitzvahs. You could be a righteous Gentile, and your life will be beautiful. Kadosh Baruch Hu will love you. You do not need to enter into this. But yet, I have an obligation to be an ambassador of the Ribono Shel Olam. That is one of my jobs in this world, is to be an ambassador of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And what does it mean to be an ambassador of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? It's not a shir that I give. It's not a lecture that I give. To be an ambassador of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is when people look at me in my day-to-day life, do they say, wow, that God of the Jewish people is great. That Torah of the Jewish people is great. It's clear that the Jews really have it together. And it's incredible. So the Gemara says, what do you have to do to be an ambassador of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So it's interesting. You have to learn. Because if you don't learn, if you don't have Torah, then you don't know what to do. Remember again, what informs my system of right or wrong? This, by the way, is something that is incredibly prevalent in our contemporary culture. How do you determine what's right and wrong? Good, it's not a trick question. Torah, right? Now, so let me throw something out at you. So let me ask you this. The Torah commands us to wipe out Amalek. Wipe out Amalek. Every single man, woman, and child of Amalek. Is that right or wrong? So it's easy to say right, when you're sitting here in this classroom. Try having this conversation with someone from the outside world, right? In today's day and age, what would they call that? They would call it genocide. They would call it genocide, wiping out men. Now, of course, we know there's so many different layers to that mitzvah. First of all, again, even if an Amaleki wants to convert, we accept them. And if an Amaleki wants to renounce his Amalekite ways, there's so much Rashi on this. When I say Rashi, not literally Rashi, but so much Perush. But this idea is something amazing. But if HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells me to wipe out Amalek, then that is unequivocally correct. It's right. And it's right even though what? Even though what? Even though, first of all, it feels, by the way, who dealt with this tension? Shaul. Right, this was the beginning of Shaul's downfall. Shaul decided not to wipe out Amalek, right? He made his whole thing with Eglah Arufa, and he decided it's immoral. He decided it's immoral. Now, granted, he actually got the command from the Navi, but he felt it was immoral. It's an incredible tension. It's an incredible tension. And by the way, in today's day and age, this tension is so real because so many of the values that we have are from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, are timeless, but yet they totally conflict. They totally conflict with what contemporary society says. The notion of gender roles. Gender roles. To say gender roles in today, it's mamish like a klala. You're not allowed to say, but yet we believe in gender roles. Not gender roles that someone's better than someone else. Gender roles that there are different jobs. There are different roles, like anything in life, like in any company, like in any army. There are different roles, there are different responsibilities. So, but yet at the end of the day, so this is incredibly important because here, first thing you have to do is you have to learn. You have to learn. Because if you don't learn, if you don't know Torah, then you don't know what's right, you don't know what's wrong. Number two, you have to have the right role models. Because if you don't have good role models in life, then how do you know how to apply? Remember, what's the job of a role model? A role model teaches you how to take what you've learned and how to apply it to real life. You have to have role models. Number three, you have to be honest in business. Now, why does it bring down being honest in business? Why that? Why that out of all things? I'm sorry? Because first of all, how you conduct yourself in business leaves a roshim, leaves a mark on the people you deal with. Good. What else? What else? It also happens to be the area people often have the greatest yetzahara to cut corners. So if you could be honest and you have integrity when it comes to money, that speaks volumes about your character. And number four, be a pleasant person. Having mekabel kol adam v'sever panim yafos. Kol adam doesn't just mean Jews. Smile at people. Say good morning to people. Say hello to people. Recognize the humanity of people. It doesn't make a difference if they're Jewish or non-Jewish. Be the kind of person who when you see another human being, you say hello. When you say hello to someone, or you say good morning, or just a smile, you nod at someone, you're recognizing their humanity. You're a mensch. You're a mensch. Says the Gemara, someone who's like that becomes an ambassador of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you see something very interesting. On some level, it appears that we have the same tachlis, that we have the same shlichus as the fruit. The job of the fruit is to what? According to Rabbi Nachman, is to what? Be an ambassador of the Ribono Shalom. And the job of man, ultimately, again, is to be an ambassador of the Ribono Shalom. We'll stop over here. Mirat Hashem will continue with this theme. Mirat Hashem on Monday.